say that Kansas City is a sports town is one of the biggest understatements in American history. We've got either the best or worst fans you'd ever want to meet. Here's a perfect example. Did you catch the recent Chiefs home game?
Castle got drilled on the play.
He's in real trouble here as he was rocked.
So quarterback Matt Castle gets injured. Were fans actually cheering when he got injured? You heard that too, right? I'm Jabalani LaFall, and on today's Central Standard, we're unfolding the newspaper for a look at the latest headlines from the sports section. Actually, we'll probably just check out the online version. But anyway, we're having a local sports roundup with KCUR contributor Greg Eklund. That's on the next Central Standard after this hour's news. Kansas City. At 1-5, the Kansas City Chiefs are at the bottom of the AFC West with no signs of light. And although Alabama's Nick Saban says he thinks the Missouri Tigers belong in the SEC, some critics would disagree. But Kansas State is in the top five in the country, and Sporting KC, which plays in Kansas, is the only major professional team to go to the playoffs two seasons in a row in the last two campaigns. Such is the lopsided world in our bi-state metro region. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. And our guest today is local sports reporter Greg Eklund, a frequent contributor to KCUR and a sort of hired gun in the sports world. We're going to get into the fascinating tales as well as talk about the sports culture here in the metro. A little bit of a non-traditional sports talk today on Central Standard. Greg Eklund, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Jabalani. Glad to be here.
Now, talk about Kansas City as a sports town as we start here. What makes the culture here unlike anywhere else?
Well, it's a town that is very deep-rooted in sports. When you go back all the way to on the baseball side to the Kansas City Blues that predated the Kansas City Athletics, which arrived in 1955, and even further back when you go back to the Negro Leagues, when the Negro Leagues Kansas City Monarchs played here. So from the baseball side, there's a deep-rooted past. On the football side, it all pretty much started. The Kansas City Chiefs are celebrating their 50th year in Kansas City this year. They've developed into the cornerstone franchise of this area that has been pretty much the unifying force of fans on both sides of the state line, because all along you've had Missouri fans following the Missouri Tigers or the Kansas fans following the Kansas Jayhawks and throwing in the Kansas State. It's a fragmented in some ways, but the unifying forces are the Chiefs, the Royals, and lately, as you mentioned, Sporting Kansas City.
And the Chiefs are an entity in and of themselves on their own, and we'll get to the Chiefs definitely in this broadcast. Let's draw back a little bit, talk a little bit about you. We're going to talk about those hot topics, but tell us a little bit about yourself. When did you start covering sports?
As soon as I got out of college, actually, when I went to college, which was Southern Illinois University, which I thought now as I look back, it's a great fit for me in this market because nobody can accuse me of being biased toward KU or MU or what have you. So I feel completely neutral in that. Actually, I pull for them all because I like to see teams succeed because I think that raises the esprit de corps for this area. Even when Kansas went to the Final Four last year, as much as the Missouri Tiger fans would hate that, I think, there was a certain amount of buzz around town on both sides of the state line about the Jayhawks going to the Final Four last year. And that's what made that season, that memorable season, when both KU and MU were both playing at Arrowhead Stadium for national implications in a huge football game at that time. That was one of the great times for our city. But getting back to me, I started out in Salina, Kansas, working at a television station as a TV sports anchor for a cable station on the nightly local news at 6 o'clock. And also worked in radio at that time, and then moved to Kansas City in 1984 and have been here since. But while I was working in Salina, I made a lot of trips to Kansas City. So my first experience of covering the Chiefs and the Royals was the fall of 1979 and 1980, which was a great and memorable summer for the Kansas City Royals because that was when George Brett was assaulting the 400 mark late in the season and when the Royals made their first appearance in the World Series.
And also a very storied era for the Royals as they were in the American League Championship Series almost every year since the late 70s.
That's
at
right.
At that point.
And I had followed that. Having grown up in Chicago on the South Side, I was raised a White Sox fan, so there was a natural rivalry in the 70s between the White Sox and the Royals, especially when the famed South Side Hitmen were taking a lot of attention up on the South Side. And there were great rivalry games between the Royals and the White Sox at that time. And then to be covering games here in Kansas City when the Royals were still good, carrying over from those great 70s teams, that was fun at that time.
Now, Greg, when you think of sports, other than politics, sports seems to be almost exclusively the purview of the beat reporter or the beat guy. You got the Royals, you got the Tigers, you got college sports, you got pro sports, you got a particular sport. Most people are beat. But at any given time, you can be covering the Final Four and then covering baseball and then NASCAR, which is coming up at recently.
At Kansas Speedway this weekend.
Tell us about the variety of things that you cover.
Well, I've covered Olympic sports as well, although I've never covered the Olympics. I've always longed to, but just have never had the opportunity to do that. So there was one year when we had a national contending figure skater from Grandview, Aaron Nielsen. Some people might remember him, and he was among those who was trying to get to the Winter Olympics at the time in figure skating and brought some attention to figure skating. So I found myself covering some figure skating at that time when Kansas City was the host of the U.S. Figure Skating Nationals, I believe, in 1985. And Kansas City still is in the bidding to this day to host another figure skating national championships leading into the Olympics one of these years. But you're right. There have been a variety of sports, and I've enjoyed that. I enjoy covering the Chiefs and the Royals, but I do enjoy the variety aspect of my job.
And it seems Kansas City is always in the bidding for something or other in the sports world.
It's a very competitive bidding process. There was a conference in Detroit just a couple of weeks ago called a Teams Conference, which was set up for different sports commissions and organizations and conventions and visitors bureaus around the country to gather and discuss about bringing sports events to their towns because it is big business. And Kansas City is fortunate to have the Kansas City Sports Commission, which is very helpful in landing these types of events.
Plus, it says a lot about your civic identity based on
Sure.
what sporting events you can attract.
Mm-hmm.
To your metro area.
And I'll tell you that the great thing that I've enjoyed about living in Kansas City and didn't really realize and it didn't sink in until I got here and more and more since the years that I've been living here is how great a college town this is. I mean, Kansas City is a professional town with the Royals and the Chiefs, but I don't think there is any market around the country this size that is as rabid as Kansas City is about college athletics on the major college level for football and basketball.
And I think we know why, and we'll get into
Sure.
that discussion later on in the program. What's your approach to tackling sports coverage without getting caught up in the pack journalism mentality? We hear about sports stories, and it seems everybody is covering it, even
Sure.
even when it's local.
Can you repeat that question? How do I...
Pack journalism. How do you separate yourself in terms of covering sports?
Well, as you said at the top, I'm a contributor here, so I know that there are a lot of different things that I have to do to keep myself busy because I do work independently. I have to go with, the quote, whatever sells. Now, and that's... the connotation of that might be negative, but there are events that command some attention. Obviously, because of the national spotlight on Kansas City for certain topics or events, But I also, and the thing I didn't mention before, I also work on the television production side. So that also keeps me busy and keeps me traveling around the country for different events as well.
And you're a writer as well. What is the most fascinating sports story you've covered? Can you identify one?
Well, I could. As you know, I'm a contributor to Only a Game on Saturdays, and some of the most fun stories that I've developed for Only a Game are some of my most memorable, and some of the sports figures that I've run across are unbelievably unforgettable as well. I used to gather interviews for John Madden. He used to have a syndicated radio series called the John Madden Sports Quiz, and what John Madden was looking for were the kind of offbeat type of stories. Again, not, you know, something that tells scores or statistics, but just the offbeat kinds of stories. So I would be out seeking the kind of stories that would fall into his interests. And some of the most fascinating interviews that I have gathered and the most memorable are those that I gathered for him. For example, there was one guy in who lived in Ardmore, Oklahoma, named Pat Ratliff. He was in his late 70s. I did this interview about 15 years ago or so. And he was so strong. He was a nationally renowned softball player. He was a rodeo rider. He was just known as a tough guy. And he did it for me when I met him. He also ripped quarters and dimes in half.
Wow.
So when I met him at a Walmart in Ardmore, Oklahoma, the first thing he did with me, he shook my hand, and just by shaking his hand, I could feel by the coarseness of his hand how strong he was. And then he says, "You got a quarter in your pocket?" I gave him a quarter, and right there before my eyes, he just folded that thing in half for me. And he at 78 years old, he wasn't able to do dimes anymore because he had lost some of the strength in his hand. But earlier in his life, dimes were no problem for him to rip in half either.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 FM KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. Our guest today is local sports reporter Greg Eklund, a frequent contributor to KCUR, and as you just heard, Only a Game, which airs on Saturdays here on KCUR. He's a sort of a hired gun in the sports world and proud of it. Kansas City sports fans, what recent local sports stories have caught your eye? We're taking all comers from the Chiefs to the Royals to Sporting KC to the well-known to the obscure. 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Facebook is also an option, and our Twitter handle is at KCURCST. And, of course, centralstandard@kcur.org is our email address. So many options, people. Join the conversation. Let's go to Keith in Troostwood. Keith.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, I wanted to bring up a story that is rarely talked about, and that is this area's dominance in NCAA Division II football.
I follow it closely, and you raise a great point. Go ahead, Keith.
Like right now, I'm at the NCAA website. Pittsburgh State is number one. Missouri Western is number four. Northwest Missouri State is number seven. Washburn is 19, and Emporia State is 21. And if we're going to go all the way to Manhattan and talk about those Wildcats, there are a whole lot of schools that are much closer, and that if you really look at, more people attend those schools than they do the MUKU and the K-State.
Let me ask you this, Keith. Did you go to Arrowhead on Saturday?
No, I did not. I was down at Lincoln University watching their football game.
Okay, well that's a great way. I mean, at least you were watching because there was a great football game that took place at Arrowhead Stadium that involved a team other than the Chiefs, and that was between Pittsburgh State and Northwest Missouri State. And as Keith had mentioned, both teams nationally ranked, national implications. Pittsburgh State is the defending national champion with a lot of players from the Kansas City area.
I'm sure a lot of people listening right now don't even know that they're defending national champions.
And Keith raises a great point. Yeah, they're defending national champions with a lot of players from Kansas City. Northwest Missouri pulls a lot of players from Kansas City. And so I'm sure there were a lot of players from Kansas City playing at Arrowhead Stadium on the field, same field where the Kansas City Chiefs play, with national implications on the line.
Thank you, Keith from Troost Wood for contributing to this conversation today. Speaking of great football being played at Arrowhead Stadium, a lot of people would say that Pittsburgh State and those other schools that play at Arrowhead is the only time you can actually get pretty consistently great football. So speaking of which, let's talk Chiefs. Todd Haley fired last year, Romeo Crennel in this year. They're starting at 1-5 in a division where the first place team is only 3-2 itself, the San Diego Chargers. How do things look for the Chiefs right now, Greg?
Grim. you can't sugarcoat it. It doesn't look good. You have to. And so the question now is why?
Why?
And how did we get to this point? And the questions that that enter my mind as I look at this in the big picture is how can certain things be allowed to happen? When Todd Haley was hired, he had no experience as a head coach. Yet shortly before his first season as a head coach, he fired his offensive coordinator, and he had a dual role, I should say, a guy who had no experience as a head coach, yet he's taking on the job of two coaches. Romeo Crennel this year is taking on the job as not only the head coach, but as defensive coordinator.
Which is his specialty.
Right. But when you're a head coach, and he has a checkered record already as a head coach previously with the Cleveland Browns.
With whom we share a 1-5 record.
That's right. I think you need to be more concentrating more on your duties as a head coach and worrying less about being a defensive coordinator. So my question is, how could this be allowed to happen, not just once, but twice during this period?
Let's talk about the recent frustration of the fans here in Kansas City. Remind our listeners what happened, as if they need any reminder, what happened a couple of weeks ago with quarterback Matt Cassel getting knocked out of the game.
Well, it happened in the fourth quarter of the game against the Ravens, and things obviously had not been going well, and he took a hit, and he was laid out. And yes, there were some cheers at Arrowhead Stadium, and I'm sad to report that. Because it does not reflect well on the overall, but yes, you could hear them, and yes, they were vocal. It wasn't 70,000 chants or cheers as one player claimed, but yeah, there were cheers, and it was a sad sight.
And that player who seemed to claim that it seemed like 70,000 was Chiefs offensive tackle Eric Winston. Let's hear from him right now.
For Cassel. Lack of experience has hurt him.
Second down now for Kansas City. Cassel. Checks it down to Charles. Jamal Charles. Keeps on moving, finding angles. Cassel got drilled on the play. Kruger and McPhee knocking Cassel down. It's a 16-yard catch and run.
Yeah, he's in real trouble here as he was rocked. McPhee, who goes at about 280 pounds.
Injury timeout.
Go back to the hit. Kruger is 99, and as Nata as well. Nata at 340 may have knocked Cassel out.
Somebody getting knocked out. I don't care who it is. And it just so happened to be Matt Cassel. It's sickening. It's 100% sickening. And I've never, ever, and I've been in some rough times on some rough teams, I've never been more embarrassed in my life to play football than in that moment right there. And I get emotional about it because these guys, they work their butts off. Matt Cassel hasn't done anything to you people. Hasn't done anything to you people. Hasn't done anything to the media writers that kill him. Hasn't done anything wrong to the people that come out here and cheer him. Hey, if he's not the best quarterback, he's not the best quarterback, and that's okay. But he's a person. And he got knocked out in a game. And we got 70,000 people cheering that he got knocked out. Boo him all you want. Boo me all you want. Throw me under the bus. Tell me I'm doing a bad job. Say I got to protect him more. Do whatever you want. Say whatever you want. But if you're one of those people, one of those people that were out there cheering or even smiled when he got knocked out, I just want to let you know, and I want everybody to know, that I think it's sickening and disgusting.
the very perturbed voice of Chiefs offensive tackle Eric Winston. Once again, that was a clip from the game a couple weeks ago against the Baltimore Ravens, and the controversy was over Kansas City fans reportedly cheering at quarterback Matt Castle being knocked out of the game. If you follow sports, it's an old story, but at the same time, speaks longer about the character of sports in the Kansas City Metro, and we have Greg Eklund, sports reporter and frequent contributor to KCUR, discussing this and other topics. What do you make of that controversy with Eric Winston and its aftermath?
Well, obviously he was very emotional. There were a few things in there that I would take issue with. Mainly, you know, it wasn't 70,000 fans who were making cheers there. There were some, yes, but it wasn't in unison. And I don't even think the game drew 70,000. I think the actual announced attendance was 68,000. But whatever. Obviously, an emotional moment, and then. Moments later, then the cheers went up when Brady Quinn trotted onto the field because he was the new quarterback and the quarterback that everybody had been aching to see play anyway. What I thought was kind of sad actually was last summer during the All-Star Games festivities and during the celebrity softball game, Matt Castle hadn't even played a down yet for the football team this year, and he was booed as much as Bill Self getting booed by the Missouri fans in a celebrity softball game at the All-Star festivities last summer.
Wow. Matt Castle, not popular here in Kansas City. What's unique about the character and tolerance of your average Kansas City fan from what you've observed, Greg Eklund? Frustrated but self-righteous, humble but impatient. How would you describe KC's fans when it comes to the Chiefs?
I would say tolerance is the key phrase for any Kansas City fan because let's face it, 1970 was the last year that the Chiefs appeared in the Super Bowl. 1985 was not only the last year that the Royals won the World Series, it was the last year the Royals have been in the postseason. So to go that long for the creme de la creme, so to speak, you have to be very tolerant. And actually seeing what Sporting Kansas City has done over the last couple of seasons and what they may be on the verge of accomplishing this season has been a pleasant surprise and a nice diversion from all the bad times in Kansas City.
And we'll definitely get to the other football team, as it were, Sporting KC. It's called football everywhere else. Mm-hmm. It's called soccer here in America. Let's talk about yesterday's drubbing by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and where the Chiefs go from here, and then we'll spare our listeners their ears bleeding after that.
Well, I mean, with a bye week this week, there's certainly a lot of meetings going on as we speak about assessing the situation. But you know, where can you go? I mean, you had, this is what you have. This is the team that has been assembled, and you have to play it out. But there's going to be a lot of there are going to be some decisions that people who are smarter than I am that will have to be made by the time the season concludes.
We've been talking about the culture of sports and sports coverage here in Kansas City today on Central Standard with frequent KCUR contributor Greg Eklund. We have an email in from Deborah. My family, she says, has the original contract my grandpa had in the 1950s to play with the Kansas City Blues. I can't remember if he was a pitcher or a catcher. Anyway, grandma wouldn't let him play because they only offered him $35 a month. So we got on the Kansas City Fire Department instead. I can't find much info on the Kansas City Blues. Would you like to see a picture of them or know who the players are? That's what Deborah says. Greg, you mentioned the Kansas City Blues earlier in this broadcast. They predate Kansas City Athletics.
Kansas City Blues actually had some great baseball players here because they were a farm club for the New York Yankees. So you had Whitey Ford playing in Kansas City.
Yeah.
When Whitey Ford was brought up by the New York Yankees in 1950, he played earlier that season for the Kansas City Blues before he was promoted by the Yankees. And there were others like Jerry Coleman, the second baseman for the Yankees, Moose Scourin. These guys, you know, there were some great players who played for the Kansas City Blues at that time.
And that's very ironic considering the Yankees and Royals rivalries in the 70s and 80s there.
Well, not only that, but when the Kansas City Athletics were established here in the 50s, there was almost a pipeline of Kansas City Athletics players on the major league level going on to better years with the New York Yankees. The one, the most obvious one that stands out is Roger Maris.
Roger Maris, indeed. We're going to go to Mike in Lawrence. Mike, welcome to Central Standard.
Yeah, I just had a quick comment. I was born in Kansas City, and ironically, as a small child, I was born the year they won the Super Bowl. The irony is with the whole Castle situation, I'm American Indian. I've been to the Chiefs Stadium to protest Arrowhead. They didn't treat him any differently than they treat Native Americans when they do the tomahawk chop, and that's my comment.
Wow, that's pretty much encapsulates the feelings of some fans here in Kansas City.
You know, the tomahawk chop chant at Arrowhead has come and gone. It was at one time accepted, and then it was one time discouraged, and now obviously it takes place again. It not only takes place here, but it takes place in Atlanta for the Atlanta Braves. It takes place Florida State for the Seminoles. So it's not just here in Kansas City.
We have a note from Becky on Facebook that says she would love to see a story about collegiate men's volleyball. It's a good look at recruiting and international students in athletics here locally. Any thoughts on men's volleyball?
Well, I tell you, we had the women's volleyball Final Four here in Kansas City, which was a premier event and a well-accepted event, well-attended event. I even attended with my kids, and we enjoyed that one as spectators. But men's volleyball, volleyball is very big in this region, and that may not be a well-known fact, but it's not just up in Nebraska, but this whole region really is a volleyball hotbed. You probably didn't know that, Jabalani, did you?
I did not.
No, and there are some really good quality volleyball players on both sides, both genders, that come out of the Kansas City area. Men's collegiate volleyball is big in some conferences like the Big Ten. Has not caught on in the Big 12. It has to start with a conference offering, who knows what where Missouri wrestling is going to take it, because Missouri has a good wrestling team, but the SEC is not really a wrestling conference. So
unless you're wrestling on the football field.
That's right. So it's going to be interesting to see what transpires there. But there are some good competitive men's volleyball collegiate teams around, just not anywhere close to us.
On Central Standard, we learn something new every day, and we learn that men's volleyball represents a hotbed for the local metro.
Well, there are a lot of good men's volleyball players that come out of here, but yeah, who knew? But like I say, the women, there have been really good women's teams, and they've been more visible in this part of the country just because Nebraska's been so good. And on the D2 level, getting back to what Keith had mentioned earlier, Division II football is not only high caliber around here, but there are some very good Division II volleyball teams around here, like Central Missouri and Washburn.
Our guest today is local sports reporter Greg Eklund, a frequent contributor to KCUR and Only a Game, which airs on Saturday here on KCUR. He's also sort of a hired gun in the local sports world. We're going to take a quick break. When we return, we talk about Missouri's rough SEC schedule and their chances of actually coming out of their inaugural season with a conference win. Plus, K-State and the other football team in the region, the soccer squad, Sporting KC. Kansas City, what makes KC an area unique as a sports region? What distinguishes us from other parts of the country? Call in at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also hit us up on Twitter at KCURCST. Facebook is also an option. And, of course, centralstandard@kcur.org. So many options, people. Join the conversation on Sports Talk here on Central Standard today. And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Philadelphia Phillies baseball slugger turned sports analyst John Kruk said, if you're playing for the Kansas City Royals, about all you can do is beat your head up against the wall. No doubt a lot of Royals fans, Chiefs fans, and professional basketball fans in a city with no pro team feel like beating their head up against the wall from time to time. But as we know in Kansas City, we love every minute of it in the process. Our guest today is local sports reporter Greg Eklund, a frequent contributor to KCUR and a sort of hired gun in the local sports world, also a contributor to Only a Game, which airs Saturdays here on KCUR. Kansas City, what makes the KC metro area a unique sports region? What distinguishes us from other parts of the country? Call in at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Also, what's the difference, Kansas City, between a fan and a supporter? You can also hit us up on Twitter, where our handle is at KCURCST. Facebook is also an option. You can also email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. So many options today, people. Join the conversation on what makes Kansas City a unique sports metropolitan area. We got a tweet from Jeff on Twitter. He says, I'm a huge fan of the Chiefs, and I go to a lot of games. For the most part, our fans are rude, drunk, and disrespectful. No shock to me, says Jeff on Twitter. Any thoughts on that, Greg, before we get to Mizzou and the SEC?
Well, there's no denying that that element exists out there. Again, you know, I don't think it's representative of the whole fan base, but yeah, those elements do exist.
Let's move on and talk Missouri and the SEC. A lot of people are looking forward to basketball season right now, to be quite frank. What's your take on Mizzou's struggle with arguably the most competitive schedule in the nation, competitive conference in the nation? Already, we've played number three South Carolina. Georgia was in the top five. Alabama was number one, gave us a in-the-rain drubbing on Saturday. And then we got to, coming up, Florida.
Well,
wow.
It's not like they didn't know that this was going to be happening. They knew what they were getting into on the football side. Basketball's a different story. Missouri should be competing at the top of their division in basketball. And Missouri really knew where it was going to be on the competitive level in all sports. And this is the way I see it from the Missouri standpoint. In football, you're going to have maybe that that once in a 20-year period where they'll compete at the top, because that's just the way it is. I mean, it's the SEC has proven that it is the best football conference in the country. So when you're thrown into that mix with everyone else, you can compete. But whether you win every game, that's another thing. On the other sports, Missouri is going to find itself in a very tough position to compete in college baseball, in women's basketball, and some of the other sports. Their softball program has been pretty competitive, but the SEC is tough on the softball level as well. Alabama is not only a football power in football. Alabama is a softball power. You probably didn't know that.
Yeah, I did. I did actually. I did.
And there's
Florida as well.
Exactly. Exactly. So, Missouri. Again, they'll compete. Whether they win every game, every match, that's another story.
Were people expecting too much too soon for the Missouri Football Tigers? I remember as a freshman during the Big 8 days, they were the perennial doormat in the Big 8 under teams like Oklahoma and Nebraska, the powerhouses of that day. Is there a sense that the Mizzou Football Tigers can get better in this league?
Well, they can get better. They're going to have to recruit, and it's interesting to see the patterns that are changing in the territory that they're recruiting. Because they know that they, you know, to compete in this league, they have to get better. But the key is they have to have more depth. If somebody gets hurt or injured, they have to have somebody who is as capable of stepping in without missing a beat. I think that's what's hurting them right now.
We were talking about other sports in the Southeastern Conference for Mizzou and where they're concerned. This is an old question, but still very relevant. Still has legs at this time of the year, especially with the upcoming basketball season. For the first time ever, no more Kansas rivalry. How will that affect the local sports culture coming up this basketball season?
I think in time, I think Kansas will get over it more than Missouri. They'll have to, because I think Missouri is interested in getting that rivalry. I think there's too much money left on the table for that to be prevailing over the years, for them not to be facing each other in a sport like men's basketball. I just think the scars will heal. And I think that eventually they will get together and meet on the hard court sometime down the road. But your original question was again?
My original question was, how will that change this year? Oh, they're not going to meet this year.
You know, it's interesting. The SEC would like to get more attention in markets like St. Louis and Kansas City, but they don't have championships held in those cities. As long as the Big 12 championships are held here, I think the Big 12 will always have the upper hand in this area. But obviously there's going to be a lot more attention to the SEC with what Missouri does and with the teams that Missouri competes against. But I think I still think the Big 12 will have the upper hand here.
They are in league with national champion Kentucky that Yes. We should mention, and they will be playing them as part of that new Yep. SEC basketball league. How do you think that shapes up?
Well, you know, Kentucky is going to be a national contender again. I think they have one of the best recruiting classes coming in again this year. So they're always going to be a powerhouse. But when you look at all the other SEC teams throughout the conference, you go into some environments where they just don't care about basketball, like at the University of Mississippi or Mississippi State or the University of Georgia. I mean, they're football crazy, but they don't care about basketball in those places. And that's where and why Missouri will do well from the men's basketball standpoint.
Kansas City, what recent local sports stories have caught your eye? Call in at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. We want to know what you think is the difference between a fan and a supporter here in the KC Metro sports realm. 816-235-2888. Call in and give us your sports story. Also, tell us what makes Kansas City unique as a sports region that is unlike any other in America. Once again, that number is 816-235-2888. You can also hit us up on Twitter, where our Twitter handle is at KCURCST. Facebook is also an option. And, of course, centralstandard@kcur.org. Email in your thoughts on the sports culture here in Kansas City and join the conversation. Now, I mentioned John Kruk earlier and saying his famous quote about if you play for the Kansas City Royals, about the only thing you can do is beat your head up against the wall. And speaking of our last headbang against the wall subject, the Kansas City Royals, they're already looking forward to spring training. It's not even Halloween yet. They got their vacation shirts on, and that's been the case for more than two decades. Is there anything the Royals organization can do differently as we sit through another October?
Well, they're trying, and they're trying to change the perception, too, because here is the biggest fear among the baseball fan base here. The biggest fear is history repeating itself, where you are developing players in your system, but 5 years down the road, they're going to be playing elsewhere.
Johnny Damon, Jermaine Dye, and Carlos Beltran are three names that immediately come to mind.
Exactly. And so the fear is that, okay, this is great seeing the Eric Hosmers and the Mike Moustakas of the world come out now.
Moustakas.
Yeah, that's right. I can't believe I got that out. But anyway, you know, where are they going to be 6 years from now? That's what the underlying fear on that is. Well, the Royals are trying to change that from the standpoint that if they see somebody coming up that is showing some progress and some promise down the road, they have shown it already. They're signing some guys to some multi-year deals before and buying into a year of their free agency, eligible free agency. They did that with Zach Greinke. They bought into his first year of free agency. And then Zach didn't care for the constant rebuilding process, and he wanted to be traded. But they've also done that now with Salvador Perez, their catcher. They've done it with their shortstop, Elcides Escobar. Now, here's the interesting part. Mike Moustakas and Eric Hosmer are represented by the same agent who represented Johnny Damon.
Scott Boras, you're talking about.
I'm talking about Scott Boras.
Baseball super agent.
And Carlos Beltran. Scott Boras represented both of them. He represents both Moustakas and Hosmer.
So that's a very interesting thing to see whether or not he takes them out to bigger markets. Is it about being in a bigger market and not getting the marquee salary here in going to other bigger markets and increasing the sort of brand recognition and earning potential of these players, or is it really just about the Royals management? Which side is it?
Well, it comes down to what does the ball player want? That's really, you know, what it comes down to, because I thought that Carlos Beltran was a great fit here. He had a great personality, but I just didn't see him as a New York type. He had some productive years in New York, but he also had some injury-filled years. But I think if the Mets fans look back on Carlos Beltran's tenure with the Mets, I would say that they would regard it as a disappointment. Now, he has put up some numbers, but for the money that they were paying him, I think they had higher expectations of Carlos Beltran. Now, he did make All-Star teams, and, you know, he put up some respectable numbers, but now he's at a point in his career where he has built up enough numbers through his career that he's putting himself in a position to be considered for the Hall of Fame. And that's what bothers Royals fans the most, is that this was a guy who was what they call a five-tool player. He could run, he could catch, he could steal, he could throw, he could hit with power. And to see him going to a market, I think if Carlos Beltran, he obviously had the final say. He could have said, you know, I want to play in Kansas City, but Scott Boras is the one who could dictate the money on that and dictate the situations. And that's, you know, we know the rest of the story. He ended up in New York.
We have a frequent tweeter, Austin, who's always on Twitter with us. Thank you, Austin, for tweeting frequently at KCURCST. He says, professional sports are a joke in KC. It's expensive to attend, and we don't win. All my life, a letdown, tweets Austin at KCURCST. And that's a frequent argument with both the Chiefs and the Royals. You get the sense that as a business, they're both sound businesses. They're both very valuable sports franchises and very well-known sports franchises nationally, even with storied traditions and great merchandising revenue and very respectable attendance, but don't feel good teams year after year.
And it comes down to a commitment to winning. And that's what Kansas City fans wonder about both on both fronts, because for the Royals, they're in a situation now where they know that they have the hitters in their lineup, but they know that they're going to go out and have to get some pitching. That means that they're going to have to pay for it. For the Chiefs, they had a Brandon Carr, a player that they drafted, they signed, they developed into a good cornerback. But when it was time to sign him to a long-term deal, they let him walk. He plays for the Dallas Cowboys. They signed Stanford Rout. They signed him to less money. It's a less caliber of player at that position.
Right. Kansas City, what recent local sports stories have caught your eye? Call in at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 FM KCUR, also streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm Javalani LaFall, and our guest today is local sports reporter Greg Eklund, a frequent contributor to KCUR and a wide variety of other media outlets, including being a frequent contributor to Only a Game, which airs Saturdays here on KCUR. We've been talking with several people about the different aspects of sports culture here in Kansas City, and we've gotten the ridiculous to the sublime to the nostalgic. Moving on to actual positive local sports stories. Ironically, we talk about Missouri's move to the SEC. Ironically, Kansas State, a Big 12 powerhouse, is making a play this year as the recent bowl championship series or BCS standings have come out. What makes K-State a contender?
Two words, Bill Snyder, a Hall of Fame coach, a coach who took a team that was known as the most losing, had the worst program known for its futility. It was nicknamed Futility U. It was so bad. And one of Steve Miller, who was the athletic director at the time, his greatest moment was hiring Bill Snyder, who was an assistant at Iowa at the time, into his first head coaching opportunity, and Bill Snyder took that program to unprecedented levels. Now he's back for his second time around, and he has returned them to the kind of glory that he established in his first turn as the Kansas State football coach. The players love him, they respect him, and somehow he finds players that fit the way he wants the game played. And it's just amazing what he has done with that program. And they are on the verge of they played in the Cotton Bowl last winter, and they are on the verge of doing something special with a huge game this Saturday at West Virginia.
And that'll be an interesting game, an interesting matchup for them, as West Virginia is a new member of the Big 12 Conference, and they'll be facing off for the first time as conference foes.
That's right.
What sense do you get that Kansas State will compete with some of the SEC powerhouses or even Pac-12 going forward?
Well, they competed against an SEC school in the Cotton Bowl. And Arkansas probably was better athletically. But K-State competed. It turned into a great game because they competed. So, again, they may not have won the game, but they compete.
Mizzou Bay on Twitter. Gee, I wonder what team he supports. Mizzou Bay on Twitter says, I'm glad Mizzou went to the SEC. We will be fine in time. Growing pains will pass. Best part, no more KU, says Mizzou Bay on Twitter. Thank you for your comments, Mizzou Bay at KCURCST. Phil in Waldo has some comments on the sports culture here in Kansas City. We're talking about that today on Central Standard. Welcome, Phil.
How you doing?
Pretty good. How about yourself?
Doing fine.
All right.
I was just calling to say I actually just moved to Kansas City from Idaho, and I really don't care about any of the sports except for soccer. And I was excited to move to Kansas City because I knew how big it was here. And I remember saying to my wife and to some of my friends that I was so excited to move to a city where there was a successful sports team. And I was talking about Sporting KC. And it's not just successful on a professional level, but, you know, few people know this, but Kansas City is actually the number one ranked place in the nation for sport, for soccer. You know, that's beating out places like Miami and Seattle. And the Overland Park Sports Complex for the soccer fields is the best place in the nation for youth soccer training. And so it's just, I'm happy to be here, and I think it's great.
Thank you very much, Phil from Waldo. And that's exactly where we were going in terms of the local bright spots. Another bright spot for the second autumn in a row is Sporting KC, the hottest, most winningest major sports franchise in the region over the past 2 years. Has the region really embraced this team and soccer, which is called the beautiful game, the biggest sport in the world outside of the United States? What does it say about the evolution of our local sports culture here in Kansas City Metro?
Well, I think it Phil had mentioned is very prominent in the rise to prominence for Sporting Kansas City because of the interest in the youth leagues around here. I was just talking to someone last week from Tulsa, Oklahoma, who's coming up to Kansas City to be participating in a tournament up here. Phil is right on the money where he says that soccer is not just well-known nationally on the MLS part of it, but from the amateur level. And the great thing about it is that the owners for Sporting Kansas City believe very much in the community and investing in the community and investing into the sport, into the grassroots that provide them to where they are, and they're getting players from Kansas City that are dotting on their very roster. And that's, you know, from the top to the bottom, that's nothing but a positive.
And also a brilliant front office marketing strategy from the very beginning. We've covered them from the very beginning on this show on Central Standard, and everything from the stadium to the merchandising to the integration of technology and, as you mentioned, the community has been pretty top-notch, and Miguel agrees. He emails in the Central Standard at KCUR.org saying he disagrees that there isn't a team in KC that wins. Sporting KC has had a pretty good last couple of years. They win, and we do a great job of supporting them. They came up one game short of going to the MLS Cup and denying me my personal media credential to see the MLS Cup in my hometown of Los Angeles.
So now you're going to you had that plane ticket already set for Los Angeles?
Not yet, because of the jinx that happened last year as they fell to the Houston Dynamo. What sense do you get that they may be on a different path this year?
Well, you know that the formula has changed this year, that there's not a neutral site.
Right.
So it's going to be a site for the team with the best, as they say, the supporters' shield, the team with the best overall record for the season. So if that team holds on, that's the team that's going to have the quote-unquote home field advantage. No predetermined neutral site this year. But I think, no, they have positioned themselves. They probably, getting down to the X and O's part, probably need a little bit more of a scoring punch.
Right.
But very much a contender to get to the MLS Cup game this year.
What are you working on next, Greg Eklund? What's in your queue right now as a sports reporter?
Well, as you mentioned, I also write, and I'm writing an article right now for a magazine called Sports Travel Magazine. It's the cover story for the December issue on the changing picture of college football's postseason. Because, as you know, last summer it was decided that a four-team playoff system will be implemented. And so the things that are taking place now among the conference leaders is how to formulate this playoff structure, the formula that goes into determining it, and so forth. And Sports Travel is a magazine that is geared toward conventions and visitors bureaus, sports commissions, the type of businesses that are involved with the business of sports, with cities that are outbidding for competitive events to have in their city.
And a very good niche trade publication.
It very much so. And in this day and age, with sports being big business and big events bringing big business to your town, that there is a lot of interest among cities that that are closely observing how all of this will play out for the college football playoff picture.
This has been a long-awaited phenomenon of having either a plus one or extra game to determine the real national championship, or a playoff system similar in scope to the NCAA tournament, maybe not in its vastness, but something that can create the type of atmosphere where two teams can meet each other and play on even ground for a championship. What does that mean for potential host cities?
Well, it's going to be huge. And I would say, I would slightly disagree. I think the intention is for it to be as vast as an event like the Final
Four.
Eventually, down the road. Keep in mind the person who is involved with this, who lives here in Kansas City, Bill Hancock, who lives in suburban Kansas City and used to work for the NCAA and was very much involved in how the Final Four became a huge process. He has his hands and is among the discussion on making that happen also for the football playoff.
Our guest today is local sports reporter Greg Eklund, a frequent contributor to KCUR and also a contributor to Only a Game that airs here on Saturdays here on KCUR, a hired gun in the local sports world. We've been talking Chiefs, Royals, Mizzou Tigers, K-State Wildcats, and Sporting KC, and how all that plays into the one-of-a-kind sports ethos here in Kansas City. Greg, thank you for coming to the show.
My pleasure.
And tune in tomorrow for a talk with Reina Grande as she shares her personal story of illegally immigrating to Mexico and the personal evolution that followed after that. Our show is produced by Tamika Weatherspoon. Up to Date is next with a talk with author of Red Ink, Inside the High Stakes Politics of the Federal Budget. I'm Jabalani LaFall. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.